Stay informed whether you're traveling or just sitting around. My name, Joe Garagiola. Hey, you know, it's a little early for Valentine's Day, but if you don't mind, I'm going to deliver an early Valentine to an old friend and also one of the all-time great Major League pitchers. He used to pitch for the Washington Senators. His name, Early Wynn. And I've got a perfect reason. I'll tell you about it right after Bobby Sherman sings La La La.
La La La.
The Secretary-Treasurer of the Baseball Writers Association of America, Jack Lang, will sit down to open 400 envelopes and tabulate their results. When the tabulation is done, we will find out whether the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, is going to get any new tenants. Now, to make the Hall of Fame, it is necessary to be named on 75% of the ballots. Since the ballots have all been sent in, I guess that I won't be accused of electioneering if I say a few words about one candidate. It may seem odd that I'd have a kind word to say for a pitcher, especially a pitcher who had a reputation for moving back hitters. Yet there's no way that I can keep from hoping that the Hall of Fame is getting ready to open its doors for Early Wynn. Early Wynn deserves some sort of special recognition just for his name. What could be a better name for a pitcher than Early Wynn? But Early Wynn has even better credentials than that. In the history of baseball, only 14 pitchers have won 300 or more games. Early Wynn is one of them. A lot of those games were won for what would have to be called bad ball clubs. The Washington Senators of the 40s had problems winning ball games. But instead of complaining, Wynn says, "I never felt badly about pitching with Washington. If I was pitching with a good ball club like the New York Yankees, I might never have gotten to pitch so much." And the funny thing is that he's right. It took Early Wynn 23 years to get the job done, but remember that no pitcher ever stayed in the big leagues longer. He won 22 games for the pennant-winning White Sox in his 18th year as a big league pitcher. Hitters used to complain that early Wynn would knock his mother down as she came to the home plate. And Wynn would just grin and never deny it. Only say, "You gotta remember, my mother was a pretty good hitter." Getting into the Hall of Fame depends on several factors. Ability is one, of course, and there can be no question that early Wynn qualifies there. And the other is timing. Wynn became eligible last year, but Stan Musial and Roy Campanella were elected. Next year, Warren Spahn and Yogi Berra will move on to the list of eligibles. This looks like a good spot for early Wynn, and I'm hoping that he makes it. He deserves it. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports. And this is one of Edie Gourmet's latest. Tonight, I'll say a prayer.
Tonight, I'll set the table. I'll take my chair. I'll act like nothing's happened, though you're not there. I'll smile when Johnny asks me why you are so late. I'll tell him Daddy's busy, but I'll wonder and worry and wait. Tonight I'll write some letters, they are overdue. I'll look at television, but I'll see you. I'll think about this morning, of our silly, foolish fight, the way you said I won't be home tonight. Tonight I'll kiss your pillow when I'm in bed. I'll blame myself completely for what I said. My eyes will fill with teardrops when I
tonight I'll say a prayer, but don't press your luck with prayers now. If you're on a shaky ladder, or maybe you're driving over the legal speed limit, you're asking just a little too much from your guardian angel. So get Junior to hold that ladder steady and slow down to the legal limit, and then count your blessings right here on the Monitor Beacon.
If your sons and daughters are growing up to be taller than you are, that's just about normal. If they have ideas about helping America achieve a better society with more opportunities, that's today's way, too. Over 7 million of today's young people are now in our colleges and universities, triple the number of 15 years ago, but tuitions aren't paying their way. The fact is, tuition today pays only about a third of what it costs a college to educate a student. Colleges and universities must keep moving ahead if our young people are to move ahead. To do it, they're spending billions, and the amount is increasing annually. New classrooms, dorms, labs, libraries are only a part of the bill. expanding faculties, adding new courses are even more important. The Council for Financial Aid to Education reminds you that higher education needs help in voluntary contributions, money that will help pay the bills tuitions don't cover. Give to the college of your choice.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
The time is now 18 minutes past 2 o'clock.
At 18 minutes after the monitor hour, here are the tokens. One of your children seems more intelligent than another. I remember when you were in school, remember the guys who were considered the real brains while the others were always teased and were labeled as just plain dumb? Well, this matter of intelligence, what it is and how you acquire it, is still a matter of controversy even among anthropologists and educators. For some of the latest findings, here's the nationally known psychologist and syndicated columnist, Dr. Joyce Brothers.
All men have equal intellectual potentiality and have had for about a million years. That's the opinion of social anthropologist Claude Levi Strauss. He can line up a great deal of evidence in favor of this point of view. His opponents, who believe that people vary in innate intelligence just as they vary in size and coloring, also have evidence on their side. Neither of these views has yet been satisfactorily proved or disproved. Nor have any of our ideas about intelligence. Examining them, Hawaiian educators William Boyer and Paul Walsh found that they could separate them into three ability models. The model representing anthropologist Levi Strauss's idea is one in which all the vertical lines representing the ability potential of different people are equal. They are also very long lines, stretching high above the horizontal line that measures the ability necessary to function adequately in society. Since many people do function high above this level, the Levi Strauss adherents believe that all men could do so, given the proper opportunity and environment. They discount genetics as a factor in ability potential, pointing out that specific physical traits can be traced to single genes, but there are no genes that govern intelligence. What appear to be innate intelligence differences, evident from birth, are really differences in prenatal environment, they argue. These early environmental differences cause the varying capabilities to learn which different people exhibit. Another point of view holds both genetics and environment responsible for differences in ability potential, but feels that the differences are unimportant since they occur above the level of ability necessary to function in our culture. The third ability model sees potential intelligence as widely variable, rendering many unable to function adequately. Strangely, this is the model on which schools in our democracy operate, Boyer and Walsh have found. Inadequate IQ tests label some children failures from the first day of school, and they are treated as inferior and view themselves that way from then on into adulthood. The resulting waste in human potential is enormous. Boyer and Walsh feel this waste could be prevented if our educational system were based on a different ability model, one whose ideas of equality were more in line with democracy's ideals. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
I'm with you, Dr. Brothers. Yes, sir, I'm with you. Seems like it's about time a student's education should be based more on what he, the individual, is capable of learning and using in life, rather than a bunch of facts and figures to be memorized and then repeated like a robot at test time for some kind of a mark. What do you people out there think about it? This is Ed Ames in a thing called Love. That's a title, I mean.
6 foot 6, he stood on the ground. Weighed 235 pounds. But I saw that giant of a man brought down to his knees by love. He was the kind of man that would gamble on life. Look you in the eye and never back up. But I saw him crying like a little whipped pup because of the love. Can't see it with your eyes, hold it in your hand. But like the wind, it covers our land. Strong enough to rule the heart of any man. This thing called love. It can lift you up, it can let you down. Take your world and turn it all around. Ever since time, nothing's ever been found stronger than love. Most men are like me, they struggle and doubt. They trouble their mind day in and day out. Too busy with living to worry about a word called love. But when I see a mother's tenderness as she holds her young one close to her breast, then I thank God that the world's been blessed with a thing called love. Can't see it with your eyes, hold it in your hand. But like the wind, it covers our land. Strong enough to rule the heart of any man, this thing called love. It can lift you up, it can let you down. Take your world and turn it all around. Ever since time, nothing's ever been found stronger than love. Stronger than love.
If you're like me, you read those little items in the paper, they get hidden. You know, like this one, for example, in London. They got a ban on bearded ambulance drivers. You know why? They claim a bearded driver has a tough time giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Can you imagine that? Imagine the difficulty if the victim has a beard, too. They'd have to call a gardener with some shears to get him apart, wouldn't they? Moral of the story, if you're going to get into an accident, you better shave first. Band, and the song is called Samba Nuevo. And we're called Monitor, and in eastern Montana and northern Wyoming, folks hear us on KGHL, Billing, serving the entire Midland Empire. Brief pause for stations all down the line to say hello, and then we'll bounce right back. My name, Joe Garagiola.
If you're under 5 feet tall, you'll cry when you chop onions. Just one of the sparkling new hints we bring you on Monitor. That's Graham Kerr. On NBC.
NBC 1970. Ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba. Monitor. Radio.
Monitor, and that's the name of the game, all right. And I'm your host right now. Joe Garagiola is my name. One of Dionne Warwick's most popular songs at the moment, I'll Never Fall in Love Again.
What do you get when you fall in love? A guy with a pen to thirst your bubble. That's what you get for your trouble. You do, but never fall.
Most of us love to cheer the underdog. And man, you got to go a long way before you find a guy who's more of an underdog than actor James Coco. Here's a guy who's always been a fine performer. He's funny, he's versatile, sad, I mean the whole ball of wax. Yet he really never had it made big, really big. That is until he met playwright Neil Simon. Now Simon's a guy who's described as the most successful playwright in Broadway history, and he is. Well, this year's biggest comedy hit is Simon's Last of the Red Hot Lovers, starring Mr. Underdog James Coco. Coco explains how he feels about his long-delayed fame and success as he talks with Monitor's man on the aisle, Leonard Probst.
What does the biggest man on Broadway do when the curtain comes down?
Well, he takes his makeup off, and he sees the people who've seen the show, friends that have come backstage, and you go out and you have a couple of drinks, and then I go home. And I slip into something tight like the bathtub. And then I read all the newspapers.
About Jimmy Coco.
About Jimmy Coco. And then you get on the telephone and you talk to a lot of friends, because that's the time they can get you. You know, midnight. That's my telephone hour. And maybe watch a really good horror film on the Late Late Show. And then think about what you're going to do the next day. And most of the time, you think about your part.
Every night,
yeah.
After the show, you
after
think about
the show, what did you do wrong? Why did you lose a laugh at such and such part where you always have gotten it? Why did you gain a laugh in a place where you have no idea why you got it? And you try to figure out your role.
How do you see the role? Most people who hear this broadcast won't be able to see the play, and those who are close enough to get into the theater can't get in because the lines are too long.
Right.
So what is the play all about?
The play is about a very handsome, slender, tall, dark-haired Italian.
Bald.
Who's slightly bald, who is trying to, who owns a seafood restaurant, and has been happily married for 23 years and has three children, and is trying to score with three different women in each act because he feels life is passing him by, and he wants to have one interlude, one happy, exhilarating experience, but of course he can't. He's rejected all the time.
The play is very funny. People start laughing
when the lights go down, when they see the seat numbers. After the reviews came out.
Yeah. They laugh a lot, especially at the very opening.
Yeah.
But there is a point in the play which is almost sad.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and you give a short monologue and explains it. Can you tell us what you say there?
Yeah, it's at the end of the first act. It's five pages monologue. And he tries to explain to this woman that he's picked up in his restaurant why he's doing this. And he says that for the first time in his life, he thinks about dying. You know, he reads the obituary columns every day just for the satisfaction of not seeing his name there. But he has all of these thoughts, and he says that the sum total of his existence is nice, and that he will go to his grave having led a nice life. And he says, shouldn't there be something better than just nice? I mean, shouldn't he once live a fantasy? Try something. He wants to know what it's going to be like with another woman, even though he loves his wife. And he says, I'm not pretending I'm being fair to my wife. If she did the same thing, I would never forgive her. But he just wanted to have one experience because he feels life is passing him by. He's 47 and he's never done it before with another woman.
Jimmy, one last question. What was opening night like?
Oh, it was a revelation because I think for the first time in my life, I knew that this was going to be a hit. And I make the first entrance in the play, and I remember having my hand on the doorknob waiting for the stage manager to tell me to go on, and I heaved a sigh of relief and said, at last. And I said it for everything.
We've been speaking with Last of the Red Hot Lovers, Jimmy Coco, the man who had a chance to make the big break and did it. This is Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York, and that's it from Broadway.
You ever seen Jimmy Coco? It's like I've been telling you for a long time, gang. A fat, bald guy can be a big hit in showbiz. What are you looking at me for? And this is Vic Dana, one of his most recent, If I Never Knew Your Name.
Crazy.
the weekend, always go first class. In other words, you just stay right here on the Monitor Beacon.
What's a dollar worth today? Would you believe that $1 will deliver as much as $8.53 worth of vital goods and services? Well, it can if you send that dollar to CARE. With dollars, CARE can bring aid and hope to millions of needy men, women, and children in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. CARE dollars provide equipment to build schools and nutrition centers for the young, water supply systems to end disease from polluted water, seeds and tools for increased food production to fight hunger, miles of roads to connect isolated small farms to city markets, and modern medicine to bring enduring health through Medi-Co, a service of CARE. Each dollar that you send is invested to help the needy to help themselves. Let CARE show you how to get real value for a dollar. Send your dollars to CARE, New York 10016. That's CARE.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
The time, 14 minutes before 3 o'clock. We CARE.
If you suffer from nervous headaches, here's why you should try Anacin.
Everyone who works under severe strain often gets tension headaches.
Everyone knows doctors have their choice of pain relievers, but Anacin contains the one doctors recommend most for headaches.
And Anacin gives you twice as much of this as any other leading extra strength tablet.
In minutes, pain goes, and so its nervous tension goes.
Anacin relieves pain, so relaxes its tension fast. Anacin tablets.
Friends, I've seen reports from several outstanding doctors about hemorrhoids. Reports that tell how a special medication actually shrinks hemorrhoids, except in severe or persistent cases. The name of this medication is Preparation H. These doctors' reports show that in most cases, Preparation H not only gives prompt temporary relief from pain, but actually shrinks hemorrhoids. Remember, for best results, follow directions. Doctor-tested Preparation H ointment or suppositories.
A poem with no rhyme. A clock without time. A ship without sails. Just drifting on the water. That's just how I feel. Whenever she's gone, that's just how I feel. My life's unreal, but I go on and on my way till Julie comes around and sings a happy song.
On Monitor, and I tell you something, I don't know about Julie, But when Monday comes around, Congress will be in session, and the predictions are that this coming session is going to be a doozy. There'll be lots of feuding and fighting. That is according to the Washington Observers. One of the men who'll be right in the thick of it is Republican Congressman John Anderson of Illinois, the House Whip. With a Capitol Hill Monitor profile on Representative Anderson, here's Paul Duke, NBC News, Washington.
John Anderson, like many other congressmen, expects the 1970 session to be more lively and more partisan than the 1969 session, this being an election year with the Nixon honeymoon over.
Apparently we're going to quote the poet, I guess we ended the last session with a whimper instead of a bang, and we may start out with a big bang this time because of the fight that's brewing over the president's projected veto of the labor HEW appropriation bill. So I think the battle lines are going to be drawn over the issues, these budgetary issues, and the closer we get to the election in November, I think the more contentious the session may prove to be.
Anderson was elected to Congress in 1960. He came with a reputation of being a rock-ribbed conservative, but he has steadily moved toward the middle of the political road.
It's just inconceivable to me that anyone could spend a decade in Washington, and particularly the kind of turbulent decade that we went through in the 60s, without having your point of view changed. How can you experience the political assassination of a president, the political assassination of a great civil rights leader? How can you see your own nation's capital burning and see some of the other events that have taken place during the last 10 years without having it, without that having an impact on your thinking and on the solutions that you propose to these problems?
Anderson grew up in Rockford, Illinois, the son of Swedish immigrants. He was valedictorian of his high school class and Phi Beta Kappa at the University of Illinois. He studied law and received a master's degree at Harvard. He put in 4 years as a state's attorney. But he finds Congress the most satisfying job of all.
Life is a learning process, and that process certainly doesn't stop just because you're elected to Congress. Indeed, I think it ought to proceed on an even accelerated basis because of the added responsibilities that you do have. I think also you have to realize that it's the responsibility of a representative not just to follow the wishes of his constituency. He also, on occasion, must try to lead. We have to be prepared, even at some political peril, to assume the responsibility of educating the people in our district and our country to some of the needs that are not always so apparent to those who live in one section or another.
The 47-year-old Anderson is regarded by many as the best speaker in the House and a master of debate. In 1968, he cast the crucial vote that brought to the floor a bill to ban housing discrimination. And then he made an impassioned speech that assured the measure's passage.
Well, we had had, first of all, the tragic assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. down in Tennessee. And then we had had the outbreaks of violence and burning and looting here in Washington. And indeed, we had seen a machine gunner and young men in uniform stationed at various strategic points around the Capitol. We had a curfew imposed. And some, like myself, were even stopped as we made our way home in the evening from the Capitol to our homes in the suburbs. We were stopped and asked for some identification. And all of these things, I suppose, contributed to a sense of great anxiety as to what was happening in our country.
The silver-throated orator of the House, Representative John Anderson of Illinois, the House Republican Whip. This is Paul Duke for Monitor on Capitol Hill.
A voice to make you turn around now, Judy Collins.
Everything turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to
Monday, and if that fact gets you down, let me remind you that many Mondays in the near future will turn out to be Merry Mondays instead of Blue Mondays. 41 states have already passed Monday holiday laws to match the federal law. So Washington's birthday, Memorial Day, Columbus Day, and Veterans Day will all be on Mondays. Don't start packing. It all begins next year. Herb Alpert, Tijuana Brass, Country Lake. A little musical reminder here about an important appointment you should keep.
NBC will be your host in 1970.
Thank you, gang. We get the message. NBC Monitor News on the Hour is next, so stay tuned. My name, Joe Garagiola.